Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A note of warning. This podcast explores graphic and disturbing stories and includes strong language. It therefore may not be suitable for our young listeners or other folks who may find it disturbing.
Hello and welcome to True Crime Daily, the podcast bringing you high profile and under the radar cases from across the country for the week of July 16th, 2019. I'm Billy Jensen and this is Owen Michael.
Hello.
This week, online uproar after a 20-year-old man allegedly kills a 17-year-old girl and posts pictures of her dead body on social media. Two twins escape a farm in Florida and their adoptive parents are arrested on charges of abuse, neglect, and sexual assault. In California, a mom is convicted of trying to drown her infant son 10 years ago and is now charged with killing her 7 and 11-year-old boys by drowning them in 2 feet of water. And then, two words, meth alligators. But first, an update to a case we've been monitoring very closely, an unhappy ending out of Kentucky. Owen, what's going on in Kentucky with Savannah Spurlock?
Well, we brought you this story in January earlier this year. Unfortunately, just a week after the six-month anniversary of Savannah Spurlock's disappearance in Kentucky, her body has been found. Here's the background and some of the latest details we have. On January 3rd of this year, 22-year-old Savannah Spurlock, a mother of four children, went out to a bar in Lexington, Kentucky. It was her first night out since giving birth to twins about 5 weeks beforehand. Savannah had gone out with two friends that night. One of them left early to be up for work the next day. The second friend left a little while later due to an argument, according to a Facebook post from Savannah's family. Police interviewed and cleared both of those friends early on. Hours later, Savannah was seen on surveillance video leaving the bar near the University of Kentucky campus, accompanied by three men. At approximately 3 a.m. on January 4th, later that same night out, Savannah's mother, who was home babysitting the children, woke up and realized her daughter was not home. She called Savannah, but the call was cut off. Then Savannah called her back on FaceTime. She was in the backseat of a moving vehicle with others inside. Savannah's mother said her daughter did not appear to be in distress, but was visibly intoxicated. Police said Savannah was in a car with two of the three men from the bar. The third man was driving in a separate vehicle. All three men had been tracked down and questioned by police, but no arrests were immediately made. Police later confirmed Savannah was last seen in the Garrett County home of a 23-year-old man named David Sparks early that morning of January 4th. Garrett County is about 40 miles south of Lexington. Savannah's best friend, the godmother of all four of her children, told CNN that she was 100% sure Savannah did not know the men before that night.
So last week, police acting on a tip went to a rural Garrett County home to search a property located on Fall Lick Road. Police were responding to a call about a, quote, foul odor coming from the residence. The property had previously been searched a few weeks after Savannah disappeared. A car was towed from the scene during that search. Authorities had been scouring Garrett County for weeks looking for Savannah, and on the night of Wednesday, July 10th, human remains were found buried in the backyard. That night, 23-year-old David Sparks was arrested, and he was charged with abuse of a corpse and tampering with physical evidence. As of this week, there were no further charges, but that seems likely to change. The human remains were immediately processed by the medical examiner, and by mid-Thursday, Kentucky State Police confirmed the remains belonged to Savannah Spurlock. She was initially identified by her fingerprints and by her tattoos. The cause of death has not been released yet. Autopsy results are pending. Police released further details this week saying Savannah was found without clothing in the Fall Lick Road yard in a shallow grave, only 19 inches deep. They said her hands and her feet were bound by tape. She had been wrapped in garbage bags and rolled up or covered with a rug. She was reportedly in a, quote, unnatural position, her body folded in half. The Fall Lick Road is David Sparks' parents' house. The rug, the bags, and the tape match evidence taken from inside the second house, David Sparks' own residence on Price Court, about 2 miles away from Fall Lick Road, police said. The rug found with Savannah's body matched an identical rug in Sparks' own house, according to police. So we're kind of, what it's looking like here and this is all speculation, is that she was killed in David Sparks' own house, and then he went to his parents' house to bury her. Frickin' genius. Savannah Spurlock's blood had been found in April in Sparks' house on Price Court. It was a bloodstain inside a closet door that police had missed during the first search there. The blood was reportedly not visible, but was found with the help of a chemical mixture. We're going to guess that that was luminol. Mm-hmm. And Kentucky State Police detective testified in court on Monday morning that Savannah had gone to Sparks' home that night. The detective said Sparks told investigators that the other two men left, and Savannah slept in his bed while Sparks slept on the couch.
He's a gentleman.
The detective said Sparks told them that Savannah had woken him up at some point to ask the address of the house, perhaps calling for a ride home before he fell back to sleep. Sparks told investigators that Savannah was gone when he woke up later.
So that detective testified this week that police found a text message from David Sparks to his sister asking where to buy a rug on January 4th. Surveillance video at a local Walmart shows Sparks buying the rug that police accuse him of using to bury Savannah that same day. Police say Sparks visited his parents' house on Fall Lake Road the night of January 4th, for about 2 hours, and then came back to that house in the early mornings of early morning hours of January 5th. So police describe Sparks as the primary suspect in the case. He's being held in county jail without bond, and the case is now going to a grand jury. The Lexington Herald Leader reports that the tip about the fall odor on the property was reported to police by David Sparks' own father. Sparks was living with his parents at the Fall Lake property at the time of last week's arrest. Three of Savannah's boys live with their father now, including the six-month-old twins. The fourth son lives with his grandparents. In the weeks after she disappeared, her family said that Savannah had been going through a rough time while looking for a job and an apartment. Private service for Savannah Spurlock is scheduled to be held this week.
You know, so here's a woman who has gone out. She had just had twins. First night out, she goes out with her friends. I'm sure the friends feel horrible for having left. One of them said she had to wake up early. The other one apparently got into an argument. It's not clear whether the argument was with Savannah or with somebody else, and then she left. But, you know, it reminds me of the cases out of Charlottesville and with the Save the Next Girl campaign and the thrust of that is that you never leave a girl behind. And I say girl meaning woman, whatever. Mm-hmm. This is for, you know, teenage girls at parties, women at bars. And it's the name of the organization is called Save the Next Girl.
It's a good organization.
And, you know, that was because of, you know, a woman's daughter had left. I mean, there were two in Charlottesville. One had left a concert, remember, and then had been picked up by Matthews, the cab driver, and then was killed. Nobody knew it was then. And then he, what did he do? He found that he wasn't at the bar, but he found a woman walking home from a bar who had left her friends and was clearly intoxicated and was able to get him to her to come with him. And I'm sure that these friends just feel horrible. And listen, when you're in the middle of it and you've been drinking a little bit and you're just like, no, I'll just go. I'm hanging out with these guys or whatever. It's just, you know what? Get a phone number. As always tomorrow.
Better safe than sorry. Yeah. I'm also struck in this case by, you know, this shallow grave was, they say at its deepest point, it was 19 inches deep, which is not particularly a lot of effort made to do this. And the fact that the dad did this, called it in, it's doesn't seem like this guy's a genius, but it does beg the question, were they sitting, or investigators sitting on information? Who knows?
I think the investigators were just waiting this one out. I mean, the fact that they did miss some things here or there, I don't see how they could have brought dogs out. Unless it was an area that, listen, when we think of in the backyard or in the yard, a lot of times when you're, you know, we're from the East Coast or from the West Coast, we're thinking a pretty small backyard. Sure. This could be a yard that's gigantic.
This is true.
Good cadaver dogs are not going to miss it if they've walked on top of it. So who knows how big that search was? I don't know.
Yeah. No, you make a good point. It's rural Kentucky, so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of space out there. Gorgeous country, but unfortunately a tragic situation there.
So this next case is developing and there are a lot of conflicting details, but here's what police have confirmed this week. Bianca Devins was a 17-year-old girl from upstate New York who had just graduated high school. Utica police said Bianca had met a 21-year-old named Brandon Clark about 2 months ago on Instagram. They reportedly began communicating back and forth and established a relationship. Utica police said the two men had met each other's families, and a police statement describes the relationship between Bianca and Brandon as, quote, intimate. WKTV has published a timeline of the events based on the Utica police official statement. So here's what they're saying happened. On Saturday night, July 13th, 17-year-old Bianca and the 21-year-old traveled to New York City to go to a concert. At some point between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. at the concert, the two got into an argument. Police said the two traveled back together to Utica and early Sunday morning wound up at a location on a dead-end street. The argument, quote-unquote, progressed, police said, and Brandon Clark is then alleged to have produced a large black-handled knife and stabbed her with it, killing her. Police say that Clark then took pictures of Bianca's dead body, then posted them to Discord, which is a social media platform, which is like an online chat channel. It's used for video game communities. And once the users saw that on Discord, they contacted the Utica police. Police received 911 calls earlier that morning reporting that a man had killed his girlfriend, posting pictures online, and was threatening to harm himself, police said. Then Brandon Clark called 911, police said, and made incriminating statements about the homicide and threatened to harm himself. The police traced the call and found Brandon Clark at this dead-end street in Utica. He was lying on the ground next to the black SUV. The first police officer to arrive said Clark immediately began stabbing himself in the neck with a knife as he approached him. Police say Clark then went over to a green tarp nearby and laid down on it, pulled out his cell phone, and took selfies of himself laying across the tarp. The first officer saw brown hair underneath the tarp, and Clark allegedly told the officer that Bianca was underneath.
Officers subdued Clark while he struggled, and he was hospitalized, and emergency surgery was performed. His injuries are considered severe, but he is expected to survive, police say. Police confirmed the very graphic photos were authentic and were taken at the time and place of where Clark and Devens were found. The photos found their way around the web, and at least one reportedly appeared on and was widely distributed on 4chan and Instagram. Utica police said they were working with social media companies this week to remove the gruesome photos. There are conflicting reports as to where Clark posted the images first, but Utica police say he posted them to Discord before the others. BuzzFeed News also reports Clark was posting stories to his Instagram as he was being held at gunpoint by police. That's quite a scene. Mm-hmm. Clark's Instagram account has since been removed by the company. As we say, the investigation is ongoing and details may change with further information from the police as it becomes available this week. Clark has been charged with second-degree murder. The murder attempted suicide occurred on the morning of the nearby Boilermaker 15K road race for runners, delaying the start of the race for about 20 minutes. Police said the incident had no relation to the race and that no racers or spectators were affected or involved. There were conflicting details in the hours that followed the reports of the crime. Some said that Devens and Clark were not in a relationship and that Clark had been stalking Devens and had tracked her to the concert. Police have confirmed that they had an existing relationship and traveled together to the concert. Some outlets have described Clark as an influencer, sort of a vague description of social media personalities with large followings on multiple platforms. Others have exaggerated Bianca's online numbers as well, as her follower counts exploded in the days since she was murdered. Regardless of their online clout, it's a tragic story.
It's really, you know, and I went to her Instagram page as soon as I heard the news, and her follower count was like at 79,000. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, wow. And then I looked at the amount of, and this is just what we do, mm-hmm. you know, so I looked at the amount of likes that she had gotten prior to those four or five before that, and there was not. So she had actually gone from 3,000, 4,000, something along those lines, and had been boosted up in death, which is horrible. You know, but the least horrible thing out of all of this, you know, this the guy living hit, you know, the people living their lives online, and mm-hmm. then this guy seemingly wanted to live his last days or his last moments online, but he couldn't even make that happen correctly.
You know, and then we had a lot of comments over the last 2 days about people that had stumbled across this stuff.
Yes.
And most people, you know, were horrified and that kind of stuff. We had a couple of ghouls that were making light of the situation, which is always unpleasant on online communities.
Yes.
But it is a real tragedy.
Yeah, I know, you know, this is just the thing of the internet. You see a picture like this, most people turn away, most people are shocked. Some people say, "Hey, I'm going to share this."
And there are certain sites that have reputations for this kind of this kind of behavior. But
yes. But Instagram did get a lot of flack for not taking it down fast enough.
Yeah, I read that they had it behind a sensitive content a screen first, which you've seen here and there. They may have thought it was if they had known what it was, obviously they would have.
Bottom line is, with the amount of money that Instagram and Facebook are making, they could certainly, and I know that there's been talk about how hard it is for the people that do the physical monitoring. You can hire a lot more people for that and hire counselors for them or whatever. But you're making money hand over fist. You've put a lot of businesses out of business because of that. Mm-hmm. Put some money behind it.
It's this ongoing thing of algorithms over editors and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Which left us in the position we are in.
We know where we stand on this one.
Yes, we know where we stand.
So we've got new stories every week. Subscribe to us here on True Crime Daily on YouTube and on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Also, you can give us a call at 888-548-9758. Share your comments or your questions, and we'll run them here on the air and answer them. Add your voice to the conversation. That's 888-548-9758. Billy, what's next?
Next is Florida. You can't have a true crime podcast about the latest breaking crime news without Florida, it seems. It's the law. We are just following the law.
This is true.
A Florida couple in their 50s was arrested on Friday after two women reportedly escaped from a farm near Tallahassee on July 1st. The Wakulla County Sheriff's Office says these two women, 21-year-old twins, have been held against their will by Mirko Seska, 58, and his wife, Virginia Seska, 55. The woman told authorities they had been forced to perform labor on the farm and had suffered physical and sexual abuse from the husband. The two women were adopted by the Seskas when they were 11 years old, 10 years ago. They reportedly escaped from Crawfordville, Florida property on July 1st, which was about 2 weeks ago. And Crawfordville is about 20 miles south of Tallahassee on the Florida Panhandle. Mirko Seska is a picture frame manufacturer. Virginia Seska is a nurse. The Seskas appeared in court Monday morning. Mirko Seska has been charged with sexual battery, sexual assault, abuse, and neglect. Regina Seska is accused of neglect and failure to report abuse. Due to Regina's misdemeanor charges, she was released with a GPS monitor and instructions to avoid any contact with the alleged victims or her husband. So the big question here is whether she'll flip on the husband. Mirko's attorney missed court Monday morning, and Mirko remained in jail. Yeah. Now, the couple has two adult sons in their 30s who live in the area. The sheriff's department said there's no indication that they had any involvement. Hopefully they will be talking to them.
Indeed. The Seskas are reportedly, quote, doomsday preppers. You may have heard of these types of people, and, you know, they're out there. People who are actively preparing for the end of the world through stockpiling supplies, often weapons, that kind of thing, on secure properties. Doomsday preppers, of course, the television show that ran on the National Geographic Channel from 2011 to 2014, featuring all sorts of creative ways for people to get ready for the end of the world and its various possibilities. These two women who were not identified, these 21-year-old twins, said that the Seskas have, quote, getaway properties across the U.S., stocked with food rations and weapons. The couple reportedly owns several properties in three Florida counties and in Tennessee and a small island in a pond in rural Maine. Mm. One of the neighbors in Crawfordville told the Tallahassee Democrat newspaper that he used to joke that the couple, quote, had a sex slave operation. Neighbors said the couple kept to themselves and would meet visitors at the front gate, but never let anyone in. The three-acre property is thick with trees and difficult to see into, according to the paper. A store manager not far away said, quote, they seemed like Amish people. In Crawfordville, the women were forced to take care of pigs, chickens, and sheep, grow fruit and vegetables on the property, forced to use a loom to make wool from the sheep and other farm labor, beginning at 5:30 every morning, very Amish-esque. They were allegedly not allowed to have contact with anyone, were not allowed to go anywhere, and were forbidden from talking to others when they were allowed in public by their adoptive parents. And if they didn't smile and look happy, they were allegedly punished, according to the sheriff's department. They also reportedly experienced verbal abuse and beatings from Mirko and had their food restricted. Mirko allegedly used a metal rod to beat the two. One of the victims still had marks on her arm and her back, the sheriff's department said. On top of that, they both described being sexually abused by Mirko Seska with support sometimes of his wife.
And they described that, yeah. So it's controversial that they let the wife go with an ankle monitor walking around. So I have a feeling that she's going to flip. I'm just laying that out there right now, but who knows? Wakulla County Sheriff's deputies and Florida State Law Enforcement Special Agents served a search warrant and domestic violence injunctions at the Crawfordville property last Friday, where the Seskas have lived since 1985. They reportedly found large quantities of food rations and dozens of high-quality firearms and many cases of ammunition in the household. WTXL reports some of the guns were found hidden behind false walls and staircases. I've always loved a false, you know, like a fake staircase, a hidden staircase.
As a kid, I did. These days, though, it seems like maybe that's a red flag.
It is a red flag.
Unless it's a panic room or something like that, but even then.
But that sort of hidden room thing, remember the House of Seven Gables? Did you ever go there in Salem, Massachusetts? They have a hidden staircase there, which they would do bootlegging up there or something like that. I always thought that was the coolest thing, and I always wanted a hidden room in our house. But you're right. It's like, you know what I also wanted when I was a kid? I wanted a van. It's a red flag.
No, that's true. Yeah. By the way, didn't Harry Potter live in a secret room under the stairs?
Yeah, well, I don't think it was very, very secret. Everybody kind of knew he was there. Nobody said anything. So.
Also not real. Please proceed.
Also not real. How dare you? They found a homemade video that reportedly shows Mirko screaming intensely in the twins' face, accusing them of stealing food. Authorities also searched the internet history of a cell phone belonging to Mirko Seska that showed a search for an incestuous video. The investigation remains ongoing. A next-door neighbor told the Tallahassee Democrat, quote, everything in the police report makes sense. They were not allowed to talk to anyone. If they saw me getting out of the truck to check my mail, they would head for the house. They could have flagged me down, he said. Several neighbors said they would have done something if they had known the girls were there. Another neighbor told WCTV, my wife doesn't even want the grandkids to play in the front yard because we never knew something like that would be so close. The Tallahassee Democrat also reports that the Seskas had met with former Florida Governor Charlie Crist in 2009 about the issue of foster kids being medically abused. The couple said the girls were on 11 medications when they were adopted and that they had spent considerable time getting the girls drug-free.
This whole thing about when neighbors are always, you know, surprised by what other neighbors are doing.
Yeah.
It's very, it seems like a very American phenomenon.
It is.
And, you know, especially I saw some of the pictures of this property in the surrounding area. It's gorgeous, but you could see how if you wanted to be left to your own devices and have all sorts of privacy, this is the type of thing that you would set yourself up with. But the giveaway, a lot of this, they interviewed a lot of neighbors and all the neighbors seemed to know each other. And they all knew that these people just never, ever talked to anybody. So that's not to say that that's a red flag. You have a cranky neighbor who doesn't want to talk to you.
A cranky neighbor that doesn't give out good Halloween candy or doesn't put their lights on for Halloween, which is basically like, don't come to my house. Oh. It doesn't mean that they have a human trafficking operation in their house. It just means that they might just not want to be bothered. And I understand that. But at some point, as individuals and as a community, we have to get together and say, hey, you know what? There might be something weird
especially
going
on. Especially when all these different neighbors say these things like, oh, gosh, yeah, we kind of made jokes about that. And we kind of saw there was some red flags and
sex
stuff.
That's, yeah, it's not cool.
If my neighbors were, moving on. We've got a case out of California. We've got Jacob Telnes. He died last week on July 7th. He was 7 years old. His 11-year-old brother, Jackson Telnes, died a week earlier. Tulare County Sheriff's deputies found Jacob and Jackson Telnes unconscious near an irrigation ditch in a cornfield in Strathmore, California, a farming and ranching community of about 3,000 people, roughly halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco, 3 hours from the coast, on June 29th. Deputies responded to a report from neighbors who said that 45-year-old Sherry Telnes was acting strangely when she left her house with the two boys on foot and took them into a field at about 5:30 that morning. Here we do have vigilant neighbors. The Sun Gazette reports deputies found witnesses administering CPR to the two boys next to an irrigation ditch filled with about 2 feet of water. Neighbors told deputies they had searched the area for the boys and found them face down in the ditch. One witness had caught up to Sherry Telnes and was holding her for authorities. The boys were hospitalized where at the hospital, the 12-year-old was pronounced dead. A week later, the 7-year-old died. Their deaths were classified as freshwater drowning in their autopsies. Sherry Telnes told deputies that her boys were, quotes, possessed by demons, the Visalia Times Delta reports.
So in 2009, Sherry Telnes was convicted of trying to drown Jackson Telnes, the 11-year-old. When he was a baby in the Clark Fork River in Montana the year before, she told investigators that, quote, bad voices told her to drown the boy. She had pleaded no contest to 2 counts of felony criminal endangerment, was turned over to the custody of Montana mental health officials. She spent less than a year at a state psychiatric hospital, the AP reported. Meanwhile, Jackson Telnes lived with his father. And after Sherry was released, She and the boy's father divorced, and she was granted custody of the child by a judge who said her treatment was going well and she was working at a job and appeared to have a stable, loving relationship with her son. In 2012, Sherry moved to California with Jackson. She got pregnant again by her ex-husband and gave birth to Jacob later that year. In 2014, after Sherry completed drug abuse programs and had no further violations or issues, she was released from probation in Montana, quote, in the best interests of the offender and society, and will not present unreasonable risk of danger to the victim or victims, the Montana parole officer wrote. Sherry Telmas has now been charged with two counts of murder, with an allegation of laying in wait and with battery by gassing for allegedly throwing spit and excrement at an officer at the county jail. She pleaded not guilty to all the charges last Thursday. She faces the possibility of life in prison if convicted on all the charges.
This is kind of strikes one of the themes that we've had ongoing here as far as mental health and child care.
Mental health, child care, and also state, you know, what the state decides to do. The state agency decided that you had a father. I don't know what the father was like, and you had the mother. The mother gets out of a psychiatric hospital after trying to kill the baby after a year, and then the judge says, give her custody because it looks like she's getting better and she has a job.
And she's moving to another state, so it's somebody else's problem, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Although, you know, the Montanan, whose name I did not include in this, it's publicly available, and I don't envy her her being accountable right now, but that seems like everything that you could everything you said in that letter turned out to be the opposite of that. It's a real tragedy that she managed to finish the job this time around and got both of them.
Yeah. So, well, let's go to Alabama.
Well, let's go to Alabama and Tennessee and that kind of general area here. There's a place called Loretto, Tennessee, which is a small town of about 1,800 people, located about 100 miles south of Nashville. On Saturday, the Loretto Police Department made a public service announcement on their Facebook page warning of the dire consequences of improperly disposing of illegal drugs. That threat? Meth gators. Alligators on meth. Amphetamine. Loretto police officers and Lawrence County Sheriff's deputies were serving a search warrant at a house early Saturday morning. According to police, they found a suspect inside who was attempting to flush methamphetamine and related drug paraphernalia down the toilet. Quote, he was unsuccessful, police wrote in the Facebook post.
Yeah, so this is like the scene in Goodfellas where the cops are knocking on the door.
Karen.
Why
did
goes,
you do that,
she
Karen?
Gets the, she gets the, that, was that heroin or was that a coke?
I believe it was cocaine.
Yeah, gets the coke, a flushes lot of it down the toilet.
Yeah, that went smoothly.
It went really
there was no paraphernalia.
Really well.
This one apparently didn't work out.
No officers, gators on Long Island, unfortunately.
There's that, although, you know, giant rats. Mm-hmm. Officers recovered 12 grams of meth and 24 fluid ounces of liquid meth. That's not an insignificant amount. The suspect was arrested for possession of drugs for sale and evidence tampering. So Loretto police took the opportunity to present a lesson to the community. Quotes, please don't flush your drugs, okay? That would be interpreted as a reference to Mr. Mackey, the elementary school counselor on the show South Park, particularly in one episode where he repeatedly says drugs are bad, okay?
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know if that was intentional. It sure seemed like that was the
probably
flag
was. Whoever's running the social media account for the Loretto police.
He's got a...
They got their finger on the pulse of American culture circa 2002
years ago, right.
Or 3.
Quotes, our sewer guys take great pride in releasing water that is cleaner than what is in the creek, but they are not really prepared for meth. Ducks, geese, and other fowl frequent our treatment ponds, and we shudder to think what one all hyped up on meth would do.
Further, if it made it far enough, we could create meth gators in Shoal Creek and the Tennessee River down in North Alabama. They've had enough methed-up animals that They've had enough methed-up animals the past few weeks without our help. And, of course, what is he talking about? He's talking about meth squirrel. This is a reference to a story we covered twice here in which an Alabama man wanted on drug charges was reportedly keeping a trained attack squirrel that he fed meth to keep it mean. That suspect did release a video a few weeks ago clarifying that the squirrel is just a regular squirrel he raised. without any meth.
Allegedly.
The suspect has since been tracked down and caught, but that squirrel's whereabouts are unknown. Mm-hmm. The department was clearly joking, but it's still good advice. Don't mess up the water. Don't mess up the wildlife, even if you don't have alligators. We don't need coyotes or bobcats or raccoons fueled up and angry and crazy by meth attacking you or your cat or your small child. Also, don't do meth, too. Incidentally, the Loretto police also helpfully offer this. So if you need to dispose of your drugs, just give us a call. We will make sure they are disposed of in the proper way.
Sounds legit.
Now, this got a lot of comments. The comments are still coming in, as we like to say, fast and furious. Here's one. Hello, 911, Keisha S. said. Can you please send the cops? I have some meth that I no longer need. I went to church and found the Lord yesterday, and I want all of Satan's candy out of my home immediately.
Just don't
and then, of course,
me.
They get arrested, etc. Regina F. made the connection between meth squirrel. First, we had D's Nuts, the methed up attack squirrel.
That's
and then
right.
Now
I forgot
this.
The name. I forgot the
Good
name.
Good job, Regina. Guy. Regina, right. you're
Thanks
you're
for
paying
following.
Attention, Regina.
Thanks for watching.
You know, other people, a meth gator, really, I think the water would, somebody was actually thinking logically. I think the water would degrade, dilute it enough that we shouldn't worry. So Sandy N., thank you.
A chemist.
Just chill out. Okay, that's what she's saying. And Scott A. said, meth gator equals new death metal group name.
I did see somewhere else someone compared it to, they were saying they were looking forward to the next Sharknado installments featuring meth gators. So there's
you know,
some jumping
I don't
off
think
some
that, yeah.
creative stuff.
Mm-hmm. I did make a joke on social media that I bought methgator.com. And I bet I'm going to check. Actually, I'm going to check right now to see on GoDaddy if methgator.com is taken.
No hyphens. One word.
GoDaddy.
Yeah. Go ahead.
.com. See how fast the internet is here. All right. Let's see. Let's see what it is. Meth Gator. Let's do Meth Gators.
Mm. I feel like it's like Spider-Man's nemesis.
MethGators.com is taken.
Mm.
I wonder when it was taken.
Opportunist.
But then I could pay $70 for the domain broker service.
That's just
MethGators.net we can get though. So
who does .net anymore?
I don't know. Nobody does .net anymore. Anyway,
unfortunately, it's not an endorsement or a
no, it is not. We are not affiliated with GoDaddy in any way. Although I do have some domains.
Full disclosure, thank you.
Yeah, I must say that, and I do have stock in AT&T. And
what else do you have in the comments section?
In the comments?
Oh,
you want more comments?
Yeah,
I got more comments for
you.
Hang on
one
second.
We got some good stories this week.
Okay.
We get a lot of our comments from the Facebook page, which is one of the largest
true crime Facebook page.
That's right, True Crime Daily Facebook page.
I got one.
By.
Missouri woman hunts down thief who stole her car and stole it back.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a very cool story. Mm-hmm. Danielle Reno, she's not an investigator, and she doesn't work for the police department, but she used her best sleuthing skills to bring her car back home. She said, we stalked this lady for 48 hours. She had no idea what we were doing. She tracked purchases on her debit and credit cards, as well as activity on her phone, which had been taken. She was able to get her car back. Mm. Everybody was like, you know, this woman's a boss. She's awesome. And she held her composure. Good job. David G. said, great job. You deserve a bottle of wine. I guess that's how
you know,
David G.
ice
rolls.
Cream in this household.
Yeah. Christine D. said, and let me tell you what, that lady would have got a whole ass whooping as soon as she came through the door. Melvin G. said, good for her. Villains never win. Justice always prevails. Unfortunately, Melvin, that is not
has
true.
Has he not seen our show?
Has he not, he's on our. He's literally on our Facebook page.
I'd like you to reconsider
literally.
That one.
Yes. And everybody was very excited
that,
for her.
I think what law enforcement would probably discourage most of this kind of thing.
They would.
They
yes.
don't want you to take that into your own hands. It could be a they potentially would. Dangerous situation. However, in this particular case,
yes.
all's well
what
that
I,
ends
what
well
I
so
always
far.
Say is, you know, do all that information, then give it to the cops, and then call up the cops every minute until they actually take
this is a,
the information. This
a
is coming from
himself, a professional
Billy
sleuth.
Jensen, professional sleuth. So you can check out our content on YouTube and Facebook and TrueCrimeDaily.com. And don't forget to download our weekly podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And again, if you have comments or questions about the show, call us up and leave a message. We'd love to hear those comments in your voice. You can call us up at 888-548-9758. Be advised your recording will be aired or may be aired on a future podcast. So until next week, this is True Crime Daily, the podcast reminding you,
don't do crimes.